What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
One of the most popular pages on the social media platform Reddit is a subreddit called r/history. As of the time of this recording, on October 23rd, 2025, it has more than 18 million signed up members. One of those members, you'll be shocked to learn, is me. I'm interested in history, so of course I'd be interested in following what goes on there. One of the baseline rules of the subreddit is that there's no conversation about any topic that's not at least 20 years old. Now, the moderators of the subreddit have made clear there's no firm and fast rule that requires this, but the idea of the community is that regular people could come to the subreddit and expect to get answers from experts in particular historical fields. And the idea is that for a particular historical field to be developed and produce experts requires time. So the 20-year rule is in effect there. I've generally used that 20-year rule here on this podcast, and I've been thinking a lot about it in the last couple of weeks because this year, 2025, is my 20th year of living in Miami-Dade County. I moved to South Florida, moving to Coral Gables to attend the University of Miami, and arrived in August 2005. And one of the most impactful things of my move was the fact that an incredibly active hurricane season was about to unfold. Three major storms impacted South Florida in the span of about 2 months. The first was a rather unexpected storm that would soon have an unforgettable name, Hurricane Katrina.
If you look at that center of rotation, it may have slipped even further south into Miami-Dade County. You know, this may be actually the center right in there now. So it may have come down actually like that. Wouldn't be surprised. The worst weather is in this band right here. And that, as the storm system moves this way, is going to be pulled on over the metropolitan area of Miami-Dade County. And
of course, Katrina would be better known for its impacts on the Gulf Coast in Louisiana and Mississippi. But it was a Category 1 hurricane that made landfall in Miami-Dade County, the first landfalling hurricane for the county since Hurricane Andrew in 1992. Just about a month later, it appeared that South Florida would get another direct hit with Hurricane Rita. However, early projections of its development were a bit off, and the storm instead passed through the Florida Straits, affecting the Keys, but eventually making landfall on Galveston, Texas. Then Miami-Dade County Mayor Carlos Alvarez addressed the county soon after the storm's passing and offered a rather prophetic observation.
While most of us are breathing a sigh of relief, I want to remind residents that hurricane season does not end until November 30th. We have been extremely fortunate this time around, but this is an active hurricane season, and more named storms are likely.
There was indeed one more storm to come for South Florida, and that was the storm that made landfall at Cape Romano, Florida, today, this day in Miami history, October 24th, 2005, when Hurricane Wilma pounded South Florida and introduced Miami to winds it had not seen since Hurricane Andrew. In order to get into this storm and its impact on South Florida, I wanted to talk to someone that truly knows hurricanes. And to me, that meant reaching out to one person and one person alone, Brian McNulty. Brian is the Senior Research Associate of the Rosenstiel School of Marine, Atmospheric, and Earth Science at the University of Miami. He's done a remarkable job making information about tropical weather digestible to the general public, both with his university website and his social media presence. It was actually Brian's social media posts on Blue Sky that really brought Hurricane Wilma to the front of my mind over the last week or so and made the idea of this episode possible. So I was able to sit down with Brian yesterday on the 23rd and talk to him a little bit about the history of hurricanes in 2004 and 2005, the development of this hurricane, which was a truly remarkable storm before it ever came close to South Florida, and then ultimately the impact on Miami and what hurricanes mean for our region then and now. So I hope you'll enjoy our conversation. Hello, everyone. Again, thank you so much for listening today on the 20th anniversary. A pretty important day in South Florida history and in Dade County history. And I'm really honored to be talking with someone who, one of the foremost experts on what we're going to be talking about today, which is understanding the impact of tropical weather on South Florida. And that is Brian McNulty. He's a senior research associate at the Rosenstiel School of Marine, Atmospheric, and Earth Science. I just call it RASMUS, as you know, you and folks do. Brian, how are you doing today?
Doing very well, Matthew. And thank you so much for having me on. I'm extremely excited.
So I will say that I had this in the back of my mind, and then your posting recently brought it to the front of my mind, the fact that we are 20 years, which is mind-blowing to me, away from the landfall of Hurricane Wilma, which was truly a singular storm. And our impacts in Florida were one thing. The storm itself is a whole other story. But I want to go and get even bigger picture for a moment and talk about those 2 years of 2004 and 2005, where it seemed like we were just in a fight that we couldn't get out of. That it seemed the state of Florida was just taking kind of body blow after body blow after body blow. Are there any periods of time comparable for Florida of like so many significant hurricanes striking the peninsula in such short order? I know we've had some recent large hits, but just in sheer numbers, it seemed really spectacular.
Yeah, it's been a while, so I can safely say not in our lifetimes, aside from that. But there were periods in the 80 to 90 years ago sort of time frame, like the 1940s, basically mid-20s to like 1950, there'd be a pretty hefty count in Florida. So there definitely has been at least that period that comes to mind right away of extremely unfortunate luck for Florida, kind of on par with 2004-2005.
So Miami-Dade had gotten some impact from those 04 storms, but and I will offer my personal context here, which I alluded to in the introduction of this episode, but I moved to Miami in August of 2005, and so I moved from Baltimore. Had always been obsessed with tropical weather. It had nothing to do with my move to UM, maybe some part of it in my mind, I guess, but it was just a weird happenstance. But I used to track hurricanes in Baltimore and, you know, find the latitude and longitude back when you had to get that information from the newspaper instead of having, you know, the National Weather Service at your fingertips. But, you know, that's the kind of nerd. That's the kind of nerd I was. And I know that's the kind of nerd you are too. But so moving here and then within 2 weeks, Hurricane Katrina spins up. And obviously that's not our storm correctly. So much focus is on the Gulf Coast and Louisiana and Mississippi. But you have Katrina, kind of to me, what the forgotten one in the middle. Hurricane Rita appeared to be a storm that would significantly impact us and just kind of shot through the Florida Straits. And then there's Wilma. And so before we bring it into the landfall and kind of the impact for South Florida, if you could talk a little bit, what makes Hurricane Wilma such a fascinating storm meteorologically and kind of in terms of the history of tropical weather?
Yeah, there's a pretty long list. it really is one of those hurricanes that, as hurricane nerds, it stands out in your memory of just a list of wow sorts of records, basically. Some of those records still exist, even all these years after, 20 years after it. It wasn't around terribly long. It formed on October 15th. But it only took it 4 days to go from a scraggly looking tropical depression to the strongest, deepest pressure category 5 hurricane on record still to this date. And toward, as you approach that point, that was on October 19th. On October 18th, it was still just a tropical storm. So it went from a tropical storm to an exceptional category 5 in 24 hours, which never happened before and hasn't happened since. We've had some get really close, but not quite 24 hours. So it had those two records right there. One is the rate at which it got to where it was, and then the lowest pressure, the central pressure was 882 millibars, which is a, I guess to put that number in context, our normal atmospheric pressure might be 1,000 or 1,010 or something like that in South Florida near sea level. So to kind of put the scale of the range of numbers, I should say, the range of numbers in context, that's kind of a nice high pressure day, typical day. The middle of one of the most intense Atlantic hurricane ever is 882 millibars. So that's kind of the range of extremes.
Yeah. Your possible outcomes.
Yeah. It's a very, very small club of hurricanes that are what we call the sub 900 club. and that's at the top of the list. So then it made landfall in Cozumel and Cancun on the 21st as a category 4 hurricane. Extremely impactful there. And then it kind of stalled around there for a couple days. Didn't really move much at all, but the forecasts were all pretty good at that point. And they all indicated a turn to the northeast and heading for South Florida in a few days. And that's what happened. The morning of October 24th, Hurricane Wilma hit Southwest Florida as a Category 3 hurricane.
So when talking about kind of tracking Wilma, and it still remains, to my understanding, again, you would know more than I would, and feel free to jump in and correct me. The general rule of thumb is that when it comes to tracking direction and path, the National Hurricane Center was good and has gotten better. When attempting to forecast intensity, they've gotten better, but it's a much harder game. And so looking at such a significant storm, like you said, stalling effectively over Cozumel for a day, and then on the path seeing, oh, it's heading this way, and we're confident it's heading this way, and there's a lot of open water in between, you know, it's definitely something that kind of puts the fear of God into you. And we're seeing kind of, you know, the danger of a stalled storm literally right now. The National Hurricane Center is forecasting out Tropical Storm Melissa and basically forecasting a major hurricane to camp over Jamaica over the coming days. It's kind of the worst case scenario. You know, we talk about surge and the danger with surge, but the length of time that structures are exposed to high winds, you know, we always, you know, we know the water is more dangerous than the wind, but we usually also assume that the wind goes away after a while. With that stalling, there's a real danger with that. Like you said, Cozumel was exposed to that with Wilma. We did not get that with Wilma. Our experience with Wilma's made landfall Cape Romano. Am I correct?
Ooh, correct.
Yeah. So Cape Romano, October 24th. And it, like you said, makes landfall as a category 3. And I'll ask you literally, I meant to look this up before I talked to you and forgotten. So I will ask you, and hopefully you have a decent recollection, because the thing that's one of the things that got me Wilma is a West Coast landfall affecting Dade County. Kind of the inverse, like Irma kind of coming from the east and going up. This was coming from the west going over. And the fact that it goes over the Everglades rather than kind of quote unquote regular dry land, have there been a lot of notable hurricanes that have come from the west to affect Dade County?
Yes, and I, right on now on the spot, I'm not remembering one, but it's fairly typical. So
apologies, October, by the way. I know I'm putting you on the spot with this. I just wanted to see if you happen to have one that comes to mind.
No, I don't. Not exactly. I'll probably think of it in 20 minutes. but it's so historically, October is actually the most common month for hurricane encounters in South Florida. Of the whole hurricane season, October is the most active historically. And something interesting happens between, I mean, generally the three core months of hurricane season are August, September, October. In August and September, we generally will see tracks coming from the east or the southeast, like from the Bahamas, from north of Cuba, something like that. That's almost always where a hurricane is going to come from in August and September. Then you turn the clock ahead to October, and almost always the tracks that affect Southeast Florida are coming from the south or the southwest. So in that sense, Wilma was not out of the ordinary of, you know, a hurricane making landfall on the west coast of Florida and cruising across. And it, a lot of this has to do with the time of year and stronger fronts that dig further down in lower latitudes and help push storms out, which is exactly, I mean, Wilma was, after its stall over the Yucatan, a cold front approached it. And that's what gave it the boot. And it's zipped across Florida and off out over the open ocean rather quickly. And people without electricity after Wilma passed were greeted by wonderfully cool, breezy weather, which is a true treat when you don't have power in South Florida.
I was going to say, I tell people to this day, 20 years later, the best weather I ever experienced in my entire life anywhere was those 2 to 3 days after Wilma. It was, again, I was a freshman at the University of Miami. We did have power in the buildings, but it was, you know, we're first on the grid because we're next to a hospital. So it came back pretty quickly, but there were still some limitations of some services. And so there was just a lot of outside time, and it was beautiful. It was lovely. Like it was just, it was, and it's like, well, it's a terrible price to pay for nice weather in October, but it's true. It was, and like you said, it's, you know, I also dealing with hurricanes, remembering Irma and the weather after Irma. I just assumed, again, since Wilma was really my first real hurricane experience like that, I was like, oh, the hurricane must just blow all the humidity away for a couple of days. And then, of course, they get older. I'm like, no, it doesn't always work like that. Sometimes you're just stuck in
September.
Yeah, sometimes you're just stuck in the sauna without any power, which is not fun.
What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage 1. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
So this storm moves over the southern peninsula, and the center of the eye doesn't move over Dade, but the eye wall is effectively, as you're moving and spinning, you've kind of got all these pieces going together. Everyone's getting a piece of it. Everyone's getting their time in the blender. and I remember, you know, because as I mentioned, I was a hurricane nerd. I'm like, oh my God, there's a category 3 hurricane going on. I got it. And I stayed up the whole night because I was 17 and could do that kind of thing. Cause I'm like, I got to hear what this sounds like. I got to take this in. And it's just a tremendous, there's nothing like it, you know, I've never been in anything like it. I've been in strong storms, but it was nothing like that. Just seeing, you know, we have hurricane shutters at, you know, well, we had, the building's been torn down, but Stanford Residential College would have the hurricane shutters, but you get a little curious, peek them open and see, and you see see the palm trees going like this, like they're at a concert and kind of bouncing along to the music. It's just, there's nothing truly like it. Were you in South Florida for Wilma?
I was not. No, I actually moved there in 2012.
Okay. Well, there you go. So, there's nothing quite like it. But so anyway, the storm is moving on shore and it's the first significant hurricane. I know Dade experiences, I think, category 2 winds, but not 3. So it's not a major hurricane impact, quote unquote, but it's close. Like
even a category, there's kind of that misconception of that it's just a, that's the phrase we always encourage people not to use, is it's just a category 1 or something. Like,
yeah,
the bare minimum of meeting a hurricane is already really bad.
Yes. Yeah. I guess my approach was like, this is about as close as you can get to a major hurricane impact without it technically being in the books as a major hurricane. You know, it's like how Andrew, I mean, it's been upgraded since, but how Andrew was a category 4 landfall for so long. It's like, well, okay, whatever, like it's something that's on its own. And like, we can just acknowledge it for what it is. Forget about the numbers and the categorization for a second, but it was a significant storm. And the way that South Florida, you know, with Andrew's landfall in 1992, it was devastating for South Dade and it impacts the entire county. But honestly, it was kind of a jog to the south, where so much of the North County was spared the absolute worst, and downtown got a hit, but not a big punch. This was almost kind of not the inverse, but where downtown really felt the breath, because so much of downtown had grown in the previous 15 years. Now I'll kind of ask you to bring your expertise in and look today. A similar storm today, what kind of impacts would Miami feel today that they maybe would not have felt in 2005?
Well, I think it's fair to say it would be worse. There's just more stuff, basically. That's kind of, it's one of the like big picture things of why hurricanes cost more now than they used to, even inflation adjusted. Is not because they're getting stronger or anything necessarily. There's really not much of a trend in that. I mean, it's there's so few cases of landfalls at any particular location that, you know, it's hard to even pick that out. So in inflation adjusted losses somewhere, they're going up quickly. And most of that is just because we build more stuff in harm's way. So I know for sure Miami has built a lot in the past 20 years. And none of it has been wind tested. I mean, it's obviously you have teams of engineers who have to do some sort of computer modeling and things like that on wind stresses on the structure and how it's going to support itself. But nothing's quite like the real thing. And so many high rises have never felt a test yet.
I think it was the Herald's front page the next day. It was a picture of downtown. It's the Herald of the Sun Sentinel. So forgive me, whichever papers, but I believe it's the Herald. And it was just, there were so many blown out windows in high rises that after Andrew, you're told that these wind tests are to category 3 standards or whatever. It's like, well, this demonstrably was not a category 3 in Miami-Dade County. And yet it looks like someone took a wrecking ball to the side of these buildings for a good couple of hours. It definitely puts, I think, again, for me, when I evacuated for Irma, and that mental note of Wilma stuck in my mind, where it's like, okay, well, this says it's certified for this wind speed. And yes, Dade County does have among the strongest, you know, building standards in the country. But like you said, there ain't nothing like the real thing. And when you actually put the rubber to the road with the real thing, let's see what actually happens. So Wilma, eventually moves rather quickly over the peninsula because it's caught by that front and it's pushed out. Eventually, there are impacts in the Bahamas, and the storm eventually spins down. And that is the last of the major landfalling storms that year. But that year of 2005, as a season, not just for Florida, but collectively, and forgive me if I'm forgetting if one has surpassed it yet, is that still the year that has the most named storms?
It was until 2020.
Okay. I think that probably got wiped out of my brain with COVID.
Yeah.
Like everything else that was going on. But
2020 was effectively two hurricane seasons packed into one. It was ridiculous.
Yeah. But it was at the time, you know, going into the, you know, you wind up going into the Greek letters. And it's one of those things, I didn't even know you could do that. And I think, is that also the year that you, and again, forgive me, I'm jumbling in my head. Do you have a hurricane develop in December?
I think there was. Yeah, I have to check on that too. But I think that was the year that had a very late season storm. That sounds right to me.
Yeah, it's just such an unusual hurricane year. And, you know, for South Floridians, there are these years that are marked by individual storms. You know, I think of 1926, 1928, 1992 with Andrew. But in terms of just a year of such unusuality, you know what I'm saying? And Wilma kind of serving as the capstone of this year. It's such an interesting time. Now, I'll ask you one more thing and then I'll let you go, because again, you've been so generous with your time and I know you're busy right now. When we look at kind of the patterns of hurricane development, like you said, there are patterns that we can pick up on and identify, but there is ultimately this great unknown about it. You have 1992, Andrew. You have 13 years. 12 years till the 2004 season, and we'll bundle 04 and 05 together. And then you have 12 years to Irma, right? And the significant impact for South Florida here. And Miami is one of, if not the most transient of cities in America, where you have so many new people coming in. If there is someone out there that's listening to this, that's learning about their city because they just moved here, what do you think are the, whether it's related to Wilma specifically or just in general, what are the things that you want people to know about these storms, both from a academic perspective and just from a personal perspective?
Yeah, I think my advice would be, it's the real deal. It's not a joke. If there's a hurricane coming, it's not like, oh, it's going to be a stormy, windy night. It can be life-altering. In terms of your experience, like your personal mental experience from it, people remember things vividly for the rest of their entire lives. It can be very impactful in terms of your property. Whether you're a single family home owner and you have to protect the entire property, or you're in a condo with just a window and you have to make sure, if you have either renter's insurance somewhere, whatever, there's property loss in that's almost certainly involved. But really it's the aftermath of inconveniences and discomfort. If you lose electricity in South Florida in hurricane season, it's not pleasant. You will almost certainly lose internet service. You will almost certainly lose, sometimes you don't have fresh drinking water, like tap water in some places won't work, because if trees are uprooted, they will bring water lines with them. And then you don't have running water. You don't have electricity, you don't have internet. You may not have phone service even. So, and that can last for days, if not longer, depending on where you're at. The more, isolated or rural or not near some critical infrastructure you are, the longer it's going to last, because the closer you are to things like hospitals or schools or whatever, it's going to be restored quicker. But be prepared for many days of great inconveniences and discomfort. And it's the real deal. So all the advice you hear at the start of hurricane season about getting your preparations and your hurricane kit ready to go, it's a good idea to do that.
Yeah, the thing that I always come back to when people ask is respect the storm. You know, yeah. it's you know, you're lucky if it weakens, and you know, people will get mad at forecasters. You said this was going to be a category 3 and it's only category 1. Go play the lottery. You had a good day. it's an annoyance, but you had a good day. It's one of those things that it is unique to our you know, part of the world. They don't deal with this in Minnesota. They have their own weather problems, but it's truly something that it can be appreciated as much as nature can be appreciated for the wonder of it and the awesome, in the classical sense, the awesome power of it. But with that awesome power comes, it needs to be a nice healthy serving of respect. And understanding, and thank you for helping us understand that awesome power and that respect with all the work you do. So Brian McNulty, again, I do encourage you. I don't think there are all that many like university professors where I'm like, hey, you should go like bookmark their like school website, because normally it's just, you know, syllabi and things like that. But one of the best like professor websites out there, bmcnulty.earth.miami.edu, as well as on Blue Sky at bmcnulty bsky.social. He's had a great like couple of weeks just posting on Wilma, and I will link to that in the show notes and all that, so folks can check it out. And follow him, and like, again, whenever there's a storm spinning up, that is one of the most follows for anyone. So again, Brian McNulty, thank you so much for your time.
I appreciate it, Matthew. Thank you.
Again, that was Brian McNulty. He's the Senior Research Associate at the Rosenstiel School of Marine, Atmospheric, and Earth Science at the University of Miami. I really do encourage you, as I mentioned, to visit his website, bmcnulty.earth.miami.edu. You can also find him on Blue Sky. That's where I follow him, at bmcnulty.bsky.social. Also has a Facebook presence there as Brian McNulty, and you can follow him and get really good information, not only about historical tropical weather, but current tropical weather. As I mentioned, we have potentially a very serious situation developing over the island of Jamaica in the coming days, and so getting good information from people like Brian will be essential. I want to thank him again for his time, his expertise, what he does for public meteorology in South Florida and beyond. I also want to thank a couple of sources for the audio that you heard earlier in the episode. First off, a couple YouTube accounts this time. Sloan's TV Archive on YouTube with a lot of the information about Hurricane Katrina. And additionally, there's a really old and great video from another figure who's familiar to hurricane nut jobs like myself, Jim at Hurricane City. So Jim Hurricane City on YouTube, as part of his storm tracking in 2005, he was able to blend some of his chasing with WFOR's coverage of the storm. And that's where you heard Brian Norcross talking about Hurricane Katrina beginning to move onshore near Aventura. It's just a really interesting snippet in time. Those are really invaluable to me. Additionally, not only for historical purposes, but just for your good knowledge, I do encourage you to follow the National Hurricane Center on social media and its website, www.nhc.noaa.gov. You should really just bookmark that if you live in South Florida, so that you can always get the latest updates on storm tracks. So with that said, as always, thank you very much for listening to us. If you haven't already done so, please do follow us not only on your preferred podcast platform, And if you feel so kind, leaving a 5-star review. But make sure you follow us on social media at This Day Miami Pod on Twitter, Blue Sky, Instagram, This Day in Miami History on Facebook, and at our website, thisdaymiamipod.com. If you pick one of those places or more, you'll always be in the know when new episodes drop and when other interesting information can be shared. So until next time, as always, thank you. And I've been Matthew Bunch.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.